They'd been married a month when they had dinner at a table in the rear at Spago with Elliot Kruger. He had been across the street from Spago once at 2:35 in the morning on the crime scene team when a Chicano coke dealer named Street Duck had been killed by somebody who shot him 5 times in the stomach at close range with a 9mm pistol. No one had seen the shooting. Elliot was about 50. His thick black hair was touched with gray. His short, careful beard was touched with more. He was medium height, medium build. He didn't look like he exercised. He had on an unconstructed linen jacket with the sleeves pushed up over his forearms. Elliot had a girlfriend with him. Her name was Taffy. She seemed about 16, but she might have been 20. Wearing a flower dress with a very short ruffled skirt, she sat silently beside Elliot like an obedient spaniel waiting for a command. "It's my business to know this sort of thing," Elliot said to Jesse, "and your wife here has the goods." Jesse nodded. "Oh, Elliot," Jennifer said, "I'll bet you say that to all the girls." "My right hand to God," Elliot said and put his right hand in the air. "I see 20 girls a day. All of them are good looking. Everybody out here is good looking, you know, but none of them come alive through the lens like you do, Jennifer." Jesse sipped the tall scotch and soda he'd ordered. "What are you working on now, Elliot?" Jennifer said. "Got a thing in development at Universal," Elliot said. "Absolutely amazing story about a plastic surgeon got an Oedipal deal going with his mother. Women come to him for a makeover and he does a surgical reconstruction so that they look like his mother. Then he kills them. Great vehicle for Tommy Cruise." "I love the concept," Jennifer said. "Do you love it, Jesse?"
"Love it," Jesse said. "Tommy Cruise.
Maybe I can bring you aboard, Jesse. You know, you being a cop and all could use a little professional consult on this. You ever dealt with psychopathic killers?"
"Not my job to decide if they're psychopaths," Jesse said.
"Oh, Jesse," Jennifer said, "you know what he means."
"Well, you murder somebody," Jesse said. "Probably something wrong with you."
"Well, I may give you a ringo as soon as I teach this idiot writer I'm working with how to write a screenplay."
"He's never written one," Jennifer said.
"No, he's a damn novelist, you know."
"The worst."
"You got that right," Elliot said. "Can't tell them shit."
He sighed thoughtfully for a moment, looking around the room, and then patted his chest over his shirt pocket and frowned, and took a $20 bill out of his pants pocket and handed it to his girlfriend.
"Taffy," he said, "go get me some cigarettes."
Taffy took the money and headed for the bar near the waiting area out front.
"I like it back here," Elliot said. "A lot of people like it out front where everyone can see them. Real Hollywood, right? I'm not into that."
"Don't blame you," Jesse said. He knew Jennifer liked him to talk around industry people.
"I'm a blue-collar guy, you know, Jesse. I make pictures."
Jesse had never heard of any picture that Elliot had made. But he didn't pay much attention to movies. He thought they were boring, except for westerns, of which there weren't many new ones. Though people like Elliot were men, and they often spent time in the company of men, they didn't have any feel for men in groups. Many of them seemed more at ease with women. After a cocktail party in the interest of Jennifer's career, they had a fight about it.
"Why were they so boring?" Jennifer said.
"They don't know anything that matters," he said.
"They are successful people in the business," Jennifer said.
"Nobody in the business knows what matters," Jesse said.
"For Christ's sake, they talked with you about baseball all night."
"They don't know anything about baseball," Jesse said. "They just knew the names of a bunch of players."
"Oh, fuck you," Jennifer said.
In Oklahoma City, he turned northeast toward St. Louis. He was in the central time zone now. As he left St. Louis, it began to rain, spitting at first and then more of a steady mist. He stayed the night in a motel in Zanesville, Ohio, and when he came out to the car in the morning, it was still dark after sunrise and the rain was coming steadily. He swung up onto Interstate 70 and drove east into the rain. He still didn't know exactly when she started sleeping with Elliot Kruger. He knew she was out more and later. He would stand sometimes at the window looking out at North Genesee Street and thinking, maybe the next car will be her. He was embarrassed with himself about that, but it seemed as if he had to do it. Sometimes, when they were having dutiful sex, a voice in his head, which seemed not even his, would say, This isn't the first time today she's done this. The voice was not uncertain. The voice knew. He knew. But then he didn't know. Despite the passion of their courtship, she'd become perfunctory about sex. He couldn't imagine her being so consumed by desire that she would cheat on him. And he couldn't imagine that she would, even if she were. "She wouldn't do that to me," his own voice would say in his head. "She wouldn't do that to me." As he drove through the wet gray morning toward West Virginia, he smiled at himself. It wasn't about me. It was about her, about what she needed, about being an actress. She needed to be an actress more than she needed to be a cop's wife. He wondered sometimes what he needed from her. A kind of richness, maybe. The palpability of her, the odd combination of intellect and gifts that she balanced so beautifully. Maybe it made no sense to try to figure. Could anyone list their reasons they love someone? Probably not. He crossed the Ohio River at Wheeling, the rain dimpling the iron-covered surface of the wide water below the bridge. He liked rivers. They always hinted to him of possibility, though of course they came to an end sooner or later. Like people. He'd been a cop too long not to understand the limits on human empathy. I thought she didn't like sex anymore, when in fact, she didn't like sex anymore with me. Even the sex she liked, as he thought about it, had maybe been about getting what she wanted, which at one time had been me. Maybe she never really liked sex as much as she seemed to. Maybe once she had used it to catch what she was fishing for, she didn't enjoy it anymore. Because she liked fishing didn't mean she had to like fish. The rain came now so thickly that it nearly overwhelmed the wipers. He shifted the Explorer into four-wheel drive as the gleaming interstate wound slickly through the hills. She denied Elliot when she left him, saying she had to get away and wasn't leaving him for anyone. This probably meant as a kindness. Probably was a kindness at the time, and by the time she dropped the other shoe and talked about Elliot, he had already begun the process of shoring up his self and could hear it. The night she left and he was alone in the house, he looked at his service pistol and picked it up and thought about where to shoot himself. A lot of cops shot themselves. They had the means at hand and they knew how. Put them ahead of the general populace, he thought, in suicide efficiency. Probably putting the muzzle in his mouth and shooting up and back would be the way most likely to take him out instantly. Cops called it eating your gun. He sat on the bed and hefted the gun and felt comforted by it. If he couldn't stand her leaving, if she didn't come back, it was always there. It was a comfort to know it was there, like booze. After she had left and he decided to at least postpone shooting himself, he found that it was bad enough to drink. At first, nobody noticed much. Then his partner, a 52-year-old guy named Ben Romero, talked to him about it. Jesse listened and shrugged and went about his drinking. After an incident at night when Jesse couldn't seem to get the handcuffs on a perp, Romero asked for a new partner. "I got 5 kids, Romero said. 2 of them in college. I can't risk it with you anymore, Jesse." Jesse nodded and shrugged. Romero shook hands with him, opened his mouth to say something, and closed it, and shook his head and walked away. When his new partner quit him in less than a week, Jesse was transferred inside to Records. When he started not showing up for work, Kronjager called him in and talked to him and sent him to the police doctor. The doctor got him to AA. He thought the meetings were full of self-satisfied assholes and he hated the higher power crap. After the second meeting, he went home and drank nearly a fifth of scotch and slept through most of the next day. The night after that, Kronjager offered him the chance to resign or go through the firing process. Jesse resigned and went home and sat in a small kitchen with ice and scotch and found himself without connection or purpose. "I'll drink to that." He sat and drank scotch, and the tears ran down his face.